How does the Fallout TV show fit into the timeline of the video games? We answer that question and more this week on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is the show where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, and Fallouts, the apocalypse. I'm your host, DJ Wooldridge. With me, as always, is Roxy Stryer. Roxy, how worried are you about nuclear apocalypse?
I'd say, like, pretty worried. I think that we should now add Lover of Love, Shipper of Ships, Apocalypse Queen.
Yeah.
I really am an apocalypse girly, DJ. Mm-hmm. Like, this is now, I am debating if I had the money, I'd be a bunker girl.
Yeah.
Like, this is my life now. And we know that I loved Silo. We know that I loved The Last of Us. We know I watched every season of The Walking Dead by myself. Everybody else fell off. Everyone fell out. And so... I think I'm queen of apocalypse, and if it happens, I should have the residual knowledge that these shows taught me.
Well, that'll be the true test of what these shows taught us. Wait, I had a question in there. All the apocalypse shows. I didn't have a question. I had a recommendation, Roxy.
Okay.
When we were watching Fallout, did you happen to scroll down and see that there was these extra little clips? This is like bonus material. No. Okay. So for those that watch Fallout but didn't check this out, I highly recommend it. There's these little fake ads.
Underneath where the cast is?
Yeah. So if you're on the show page, there should be a section that's like bonus whatever, bonus material or something. And okay, so there's these little fake commercials for Vault-Tec that are in universe, and they are hilarious. They are so funny. So I recommend, and for anybody that played the Fallout games, you know the exact tone these are going to be in. They're great. I definitely recommend, because I don't remember, I guess I just finished an episode and I was just, you know, scrolling around the page and I saw these, and they're like 3 minutes a piece. And when I saw, there was only two, but they're great. They're awesome.
I'm so excited for that. And also really cool. That's partially why we do this show. Mike Joyce is like, there's bonus material. Yep. Like, that's the jam. That's what I want to know.
Yes.
Thanks for hot tea, DJ.
Yes, it's there and it's awesome. It's great. And this is what we're talking about today. So last week, Prime Video released the Fallout show based off the video game series. Roxy and I have watched it. And yes. I've seen a lot of discourse online about where the show fits into the game timeline, because it is canon to the games. And we're going to dive into that. We're going to go through the whole Fallout timeline, see where the show fits in, and see if there are discrepancies, because people are worried that maybe their favorite Fallout game is no longer canon because of things that happen in the show. We're going to get into all that. But before we do, as always, you can listen to the show everywhere podcasts are heard. But if you do it on Spotify, we have a question. Last week's question was actually a poll. Do you think the Fantastic Four is set in an alternate universe? 85% of you said, yes, it is. 14% of you said, no, it wasn't. Roxy, I can't remember where we landed. Were you, by the end of the episode, were you convinced it was set in an alternate universe?
I don't think my job was to say whether it was or wasn't as much as to hear about why it could be and if I would like that or not.
Yeah.
And what I determined was, if it is, then I'm down with that.
Uh-huh.
And you would prefer it not to be. And
yes.
I think I'm on the side of, I think it should be.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see how it shakes out. I did see a report today that, like, don't worry, everybody, classic Norn Rad Silver Surfer is also going to be in it. I'm like, yeah, that's still, again, then you're just wasting Julia Garner on not the Silver Surfer. Like, anyway, not going to get into it. We did a whole episode on it. Patreon.com/onlystupidanswers if you want to watch this live. If you want to check out Patreon exclusive shows like what we're into in Spider-Versity, you can do that over there. But now let's get into the big question this week. How does the Fallout show fit into the official timeline? Now, Roxy, we both know that you're an expert gamer.
Yeah, I am such an expert gamer that I have some general questions for you before we even jump in.
Yes.
Okay. So I know we're going to talk about the timeline and where this fits with the four games that exist in the four different cities. That's what you've told me, right?
Yeah, there's four main games, but there's more games than that. But there's the four, one, two, three, four numbered ones.
I am such an expert gamer that I'm way too advanced for this game, obviously. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I've played so many games that I forget. Are these characters from all of the games, one of the game, none of the games?
So the characters in the Fallout show are, by and large, all original characters.
From the first game.
From the show, none of the games. They're not any new games.
Original
to the show. So in some ways, I think Fallout has a benefit over something like Last of Us, where Last of Us tells a very specific story. And so if you're going to adapt Last of Us, you're telling that story. Whereas Fallout is mostly a world. In each game, you're starting, it's the same world, but you're a new character meeting new people in that same global world. It's someplace in the United States.
But none of those new characters are Ella Purnell's character?
No. She's a completely original character to the show. There are a couple, specifically in the last episode, there is a character that appears in one of the games that shows up as a cameo. But concepts like the ghoul, like ghouls in general, the zombie type characters, the Brotherhood of Steel, those things factor into pretty much every game. But specifically, Walton Goggins, the ghoul, has not appeared in any games. Ella Purnell's Vault Dweller has not appeared in any games.
And the vaults are in games.
Yes,
though,
yes.
But not specifically her and not her family, yes. Not her brother, none of the characters.
But the things, we're saving the discussion about the show later because we're going to get into spoilers. But obviously her family in particular is kind of crucial to the Fallout lore. That impacts what we know of the games because it's set in the same continuity. Even though those characters haven't shown up, all the events in the show are now part of the canon. Like that's questions audience members, like for instance, it's been a debate for fans for a long time of who dropped the bombs first. Theoretically, the shows gave us an answer to that. And now that is canon. We didn't know, now we know. Although I do have some nits to pick there.
Okay. Were there things that you did know that this show reiterated? Or is that not the case? Like was some of this already... Was some of this being rehashed, or this is all new story?
Some of it, like the Great War, which is where the bombs dropped, is key to the entire franchise, and all that is for like the newcomers. Like, hey, just so you know, here's the basic rundown at this date, and we're going to be getting into all that at this date. Everybody dropped their nukes. Bad news for everybody. Some people lived in vaults. All that's basically rehashed, but it's all because you start pretty much fresh every game. That's rehashed every game. Like, by the way, here's the basic rundown of the world you're in. And certain
elements.
Yes.
There's one lead character the whole time.
Yeah. There's each game you create a new lead character. So, and we'll get into that. So like, and usually, this isn't always the case, but usually it is a vault dweller, but they each come from different vaults and they each leave the vaults for different reasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
So kind of the world is the same.
Yes.
The premises are the same. The characters are the only thing that are really different living in this world.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And normally because each game takes place in a different pocket, you know what I mean? So they wouldn't necessarily interact with... So, and we'll get into that. So if game 4, I think, takes place in the Commonwealth. Don't worry, gang. I have it in my notes. I'm just not there yet. It takes place in the Commonwealth, which is like Boston and outlying areas, whereas game 3 took place in the Capital Wasteland, which is DC. So they're not, you know, we're not taking flights to see each other. So those stories don't really impact each other.
But all United States based.
They are. There is, right now, there's a fan-made game that's going to take place in the UK, but all of the mainline games have taken place into what was once the United States.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's, now that you guys have thank you for those questions, Roxy, because now everybody's kind of brushed up. Here is what we know about the show. And a lot of this was taken from, IGN had a conversation with Todd Howard, who was the Fallout he's the director at Bethesda Game Studios. Bethesda is currently the publisher of the Fallout series. And Jonathan
Wasn't
Nolan.
Initially, they're currently, but weren't always.
Weren't always. We're going to get into that. And then executive producer Jonathan Nolan, who directed the first 3 episodes of the show. And they confirmed, both of them confirmed, that it does take place in the same timeline, Nolan said, quote, everyone who worked on Fallout, all the games, were so respectful and so careful to keep this consistent universe. If we'd gone a different direction, the show would be the only thing that doesn't fit with that universe. We didn't want to be in our own private corner of an Elseworld or a different universe. I think it will be less meaningful to me watching the series to know it was completely divorced from the reality of the games. So basically, this is kind of like we talked about earlier, there's four mainline Fallout games. They kind of treated this as if it were story-wise Fallout 5. This is a canon part of the story. It matters to the story. And chronologically, the first game in the series is actually the most recently released. That's Fallout 76, which came out in 2018 and is so far the first...
Fallout 76?
Fallout 76. Well, it's because you start in Vault 76. That's why it's called 76.
Word, yeah. Which I already knew, obviously.
Yes.
Wanted everybody else to know how crazy that would have been.
That would have been if there's 76 games. No, there's not. I think there's like six. Chronologically, the first one is, I'm already jumping ahead. Chronologically is the Great War. So according to the timeline of the games, which we see the beginning of the nukes dropping in the first scene, Fallout, which I thought was that the first scene of the Fallout show immediately like, ooh, I'm in. Ooh, yeah, got me. I'm in.
So the Great War is when we are in the Fallout show, when we're at the party and we see them looking through the glass and the nukes get dropped.
Yes.
And that is also something that you have seen in the games.
Yeah. Specifically, you see it's obviously referenced in every game, but you see it specifically in Fallout 4 because, like the show, it begins pre the Great War. So this is a little bit tricky in that Fallout takes place in an alternate retro-futuristic reality. So it's as if it's in a reality, as if the Cold War never ended and atomic energy became everything. And so we're in this alternate 2077. And as referenced in the show a bunch, America is in the midst of what is called the Sino-American War, which is between China and the USA. That war pivots into what is called the Great War, which is when everybody drops their nuclear bombs. And the Great War lasts 4 hours. It's four hours, and then everybody's wiped off the face of the earth.
what we're supposed to understand, that that's the what is happening in the United States is also happening in China, is also happening everywhere, that this is... across board what's happened?
That is a good question. I don't know that the show engages with that. In the games, it's like, yeah, everybody's done. Everybody gets nuked, basically. But you're right. I don't know that the show... Does the show explain that? Or is it just assumed... Does it just, like, the United States is done?
What my understanding from only having watched the show is that I was, like, thinking the whole time, what if we could get on a boat? What? Because I didn't know what was going on elsewhere. That doesn't mean that they said that there was nothing going on elsewhere. I just didn't know.
Yeah, my understanding of the Great War is basically nukes were dropped. And so then once nukes went, everybody else launched their nukes. And so then everybody's gone. Okay. And by everybody, we see that there are people that live on that survive and everything. But like, you know, society as we know it. It's not like you could go to like France and France is okay. No, everybody's nuked.
And so the year you said is 2077.
In this universe, Saturday, October 23rd, 2077 is where all the nukes get dropped. So then we jump in the game timeline. We jump to 2102. This is where we get Fallout 76, which is called that because you start out coming out of Vault 76. And this game was released in 2018 and is the first and I think only multiplayer game in the Fallout franchise. I thought it was a MMO, a massively multiplayer RPG. I saw some things online that led me to believe that I would get yelled at if I suggested it was an MMO.
Sorry, DJ. Tell me what the difference between those things are that you're saying.
So if you were to play a first-person shooter like Call of Duty, you could go online and shoot your friends. And that would be that's multiplayer. That's the multiplayer mode. Massively multiplayer games are games that pretty much exist in the multiplayer space. So something like World of Warcraft is probably the prime example. of where, you know, the primary function of the game is you get on and do raids, like you go into dungeons and fight monsters with your friends, and it exists in a persistent multiplayer state, as opposed to, again, like a Call of Duty, where there is a campaign and I can go play with my friends, but it's not specifically a persistent multiplayer world where we're all like enacting stories together in the multiplayer space. So like something like Call of Duty is more competitive, whereas something like Warcraft is more cooperative, although there is a competitive element. And I thought Fallout 76, because it exists in a persistent multiplayer state, I thought it was an MMO, but I was like, nobody was calling it that. So I looked it up and I saw some Reddit posts that were like, idiot, of course it's not an MMO. I'm like, all right, I don't do MMOs, so I don't know.
But it's not an MMO because what?
Great question. I do not know. I'm not an MMO player, and I haven't played 76. I'll let you guys know what games I've played and what games I haven't. I haven't played 76 because I thought it was an MMO. So I didn't play it. I also heard not some great things. But anyway, as far as the setting of it, it is set in Appalachia, which is former West Virginia. I've got family from West Virginia. Again, it's in 2102, which is 25 years after the Great War. I'm not going to lie, that seems a little soon to be getting out of those vaults, but whatever. And it's kind of been described as a prequel to the other games. And again, it's called Fallout 76 because you play Vault Dweller from Vault 76. Then we jump in the timeline to the first Fallout game, which is set in 2161. So this game starts 84 years after the Great War. And it is set in Southern California. And this is the first time in the game series we see Shady Sands, which is referenced in the show.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's a key. What happened to Shady Sands is a big deal in the show. And you play a Vault Dweller from Vault 13. And Fallout 1 was developed and published by Interplay Productions in 1997. So that was when the Fallout franchise first started.
Been around for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were the? I know that this is a little deviating, but what were the '90s games at the time? Like, that is this not the biggest game of that time? Then?
No. It wouldn't be. It was a very well-regarded RPG. So, for those that play the games, if you're like me and you started with Fallout 3, Fallout 3 is more of a, and we'll get into this later too, is an open world, kind of first-person shooter. Although you can play it not first-person, whereas the first Fallout is a more traditional turn-placed isometric RPG. And at the time, Roxy, RPGs were not role-playing games. Video game role-playing games were not, I want to be smart about how I say this, weren't as big as they are now. And I think by that I mean that role-playing elements have become commonplace in other game genres. For example, Cyberpunk 2077 is a first-person shooter, but it has role-playing elements in that you can choose different attributes for your characters, and you can build those up. And as you build up your character, you can unlock different skills. Those are all RPG elements that have now become kind of commonplace in, I think, in Star Wars Jedi Survivor series, there's role-playing elements, even though that's more of an adventure game. So I think, and I want to say Fallout 1 was only a PC game. So people like me that only play on console, so like in the 90s, you're talking Nintendo and Sega, wouldn't be playing this game. But I think for the people that are into role-playing games, this was I think this got awards for being the best role-playing game of the year. And obviously was successful enough to keep generating a franchise. I don't think it was until Fallout 3 that it became as big as it is now to garner people wanting to make a TV show out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I hear RPG, I think Dungeons and Dragons.
RPG started with, people are going to probably yell at me, but you know, the most popular tabletop RPG that people are aware of is Dungeons and Dragons. Which is where, you know, you kind of choose your character's attributes. Normally there's a dungeon master that runs the campaign for you. And that obviously offers the most amount of freedom because nobody needs to program it. It's all you and your friends and their imagination. Those elements got incorporated into video games. I think at the time, like when you're talking the 90s, the RPGs I would have known about would have been like Final Fantasy, which offer some of those same elements, except in video game form. And so there's typically less player freedom because somebody had to program what you could or couldn't do in the game. But that's part of the evolutionary track of you go from tabletop RPGs like Dungeons and Dragons, where it's pen and paper and stuff like that, to RPG video games. Those elements became so popular that they got integrated. Like, I think there's even skill trees in something like Call of Duty. But yeah, so RPG is also, Dungeons and Dragons, yes, is RPG.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
After Fallout 1, in the chronology of the story, there's a game called Fallout Tactics, which is we're going a lot of different video game genres here, Roxy. That's a turn-based tactical RPG, which is different than the other games because it's more you're more moving around like army units and stuff like that, as opposed to playing a specific character. That game follows the origins of the Brotherhood of Steel and was developed by Microforte. And published by 14 Degrees in 2001. So that's what, 4 years after Fallout 1. Then we get, and again, we're just to clarify everybody, we're going through the chronological timelines of the Fallout universe. So like, I'm going to jump to Fallout 2. That game came out before Fallout Tactics, but the story of Fallout Tactics takes place before Fallout 2. You're welcome. Sorry, everybody. So now we're at Fallout 2, which is a direct sequel to Fallout 1, which is rare in the franchise. You asked me, Roxy, if like we like characters pick up from stories. This is the only game where that is kind of true, in that the character you play in Fallout 2 is a direct descendant of the main character from Fallout 1. And at this point in the franchise, and so this is also a rare game in that you don't start as a vault dweller. Most of these games, you start out coming out of a vault. This one, you're the direct descendant of the player from the last one, so you're not coming out of a vault in this one.
DJ, what was that image that you just showed?
This one, so are you talking about the guy in the...
Yeah.
Yeah, so you saw in the show, they mentioned the Enclave. That's where the guy escaped with the dog, and he was the head guy. He worked for the Enclave. Fallout 2 is where we introduce the Enclave, and the Enclave is essentially the remnants of the previous governments. And they're typically, everybody is morally ambiguous in the Fallout franchise. Every faction has their problems. The Enclave traditionally is the bad guys. They are mostly just bad. That guy there, I think, because they show up in Fallout 3 too, and this is kind of like the Brotherhood of Steel has their power armor. This is the Enclave version of that.
So this isn't the Brotherhood of Steel, no. What they look like in the games. This is a completely different faction.
That, yes. Yeah. If I'm remembering correctly, I want to say that's the Enclave's version of the power armor. Long story short, I kind of want to say like, you know, Brotherhood Steel's the good guys, Enclave's the bad guys, but that's not, Brotherhood Steel's isn't the good guys. They are just less evil than the Enclave traditionally is.
I can't wait to talk about them because I'm so curious the differences, but okay, we'll get there.
Yeah, so in Fallout 2, direct continuation of the first one, also at this point, Shady Sands has evolved into becoming the new California Republic. Again, this is important to the timeline of the show. And the character in the show that worked for the Enclave was Siggy Wilzig, played by Michael Emerson. who's great. He doesn't, he's not long lived in that show, but he's fantastic the short amount of time he's there.
I don't think ever spoken about this DJ. Are you a Lost fan?
I've seen a few episodes of Lost. I've seen him in Lost. I've seen him be excellent in Lost. Like, I get why he, and he's one of those, like, he's like Giancarlo Esposito after Breaking Bad. Like, you're this guy now. This is what we cast you for.
Yeah, it's crazy because obviously Michael Emerson is a very seasoned actor who's unbelievable. But to me, like, that is one of the greatest performances of all time.
Yeah.
He's the by far and away the best villain of Lost, but also maybe the best villain of any network television show ever.
Yeah.
He is so, so great. So when I saw him pop up here, I was like losing my mind, DJ. I mean, losing my mind. Such a cool casting.
And what was cool too is, especially as a fan of the game, like, okay, Michael Emerson works for the Enclave. I know who this guy is. And then as the show unfolds, you're like, actually, I don't. Actually, he seems like a decent dude. Like, maybe a little off-putting, but hey, everybody kind of is in the wasteland.
Quirky.
Dude, when he starts describing the cyanide pill, I'm like, this is fucking dark, but very funny. Surprised it didn't take on more. Yeah. What?
Yeah, that was wild. As a random little side note about him, because when I saw him on the show, I was like, oh my God, what has he been doing lately? I need to know. This man is 70 years old, DJ.
Wow.
He's 69.
Wow.
I was like, I honestly would have guessed that he was 50.
Yeah.
Like, he's 70 years old.
God bless him. He's good. I mean, and he was on stuff like, he was on Person of Interest forever. Yeah. So that's one of those shows that was on way longer than I thought it was. You get on one of those CBS procedurals, you're good to go.
Straight up.
So this game, Fallout 2, was developed by Black Isle Studios and was published by Interplay in 1998. So this was back in the day where you could turn out a sequel to a game in a year. The Fallout games do not come out this quickly anymore, considering I think Fallout 4 came out almost a decade ago and we still don't have Fallout 5. So now we get into where DJ enters the picture as a gamer, Fallout 3. So you asked earlier, Roxy, Bethesda didn't publish all the games. This is where Bethesda enters the picture. They bought the rights to Fallout. Bethesda is known for the Elder Scrolls games, which, like Fallout, are big. Open world, so you can just go anywhere in this game and uncover stuff. And so, and like the Elder Scrolls games, which are first person, Bethesda buys the rights to Fallout, turns it, makes it more first person, and makes it a little bit more action oriented, and it's on consoles. So basically it's a lot more accessible, which allows gamers like me that aren't PC gamers and aren't necessarily like hardcore. I actually like the RPG genre quite a bit, but it's like, I'm not finding the obscure games or whatever. It makes it more accessible. So gamers like me are able to enter the franchise and fall in love with the world because the tone is the same. It's just the gameplay, just more accessible. So, Fallout 3 came out in 2008. So that's 10 years after Fallout 2. And it's set in the Capital Wasteland, which is Washington, D.C. and the surrounding areas. And you're playing a vault dweller from 101 who's looking for their missing father, like the show. And I want to say, I did boot up my old Fallout 3 game and I thought I heard a recognizable voice. But before I say it, let me confirm that it was who I thought it was. This is probably also the point where you start getting celebrity voices in your Fallout franchise because... Hold on. Is it true?
If you're wrong, we'll never forgive you.
It's Liam Neeson. Yeah, Liam Neeson plays the dad. Malcolm McDowell's in this too.
Does he have a certain set of skills?
No, he gets kidnapped, so I'm going to say no. This is almost a reverse Taken where you got to go save your dad in this one. So this game, Fallout 3, is followed by New Vegas, which is set in 2281. We're going to camp here for a second, Roxy.
Hey, sorry, can you say that sentence again?
Fallout 3 is Fallout New Vegas.
Is Fallout New Vegas.
Is followed by Fallout New Vegas. Is followed out. No. The next game in the series is Fallout New Vegas, which is set in 2281. And we're going to...
So this is Fallout 4.
No. Because there is a Fallout 4. So this is kind of like a spin-off game. It's developed by a different studio, but published by Bethesda. A couple things make it different beyond being... So this was developed by Obsidian and not Bethesda.
But this is the fourth game they released.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, again, if you're counting something like Tactics, like kind of like Tactics is a spinoff. This is a spinoff too. It's the same gameplay. I'm going to assume it's the same game engine, but it's not one of the mainline games because there's a few differences. Like for this one, you don't play a Vault Dweller. You play a Courier.
Okay.
The reason we're going to camp here for a second is because this is where some of the timeline contention arises from the show. The show says some things that makes Fallout New Vegas fans think, wait, is this game not canon anymore? And the showrunner and the people involved in the show have said, no, it absolutely is canon. So we're going to get into that. I'll say this, because this was technically supposed to be a spinoff game, I didn't play this one. Now, the problem with that is when you go back and you look at people's lists, like what's the best Fallout game, this is almost universally the top one. This is everybody's favorite Fallout game.
Number one?
Yeah. Fallout New Vegas is pretty much universally said to be the best Fallout game. And I didn't play it. So I'm working on rectifying that, gang. I chased down an old copy. I dusted off my old system. So I'm going to play out Fallout New Vegas for the first time because watching the show, I really want to play Fallout again. And it's like, I never played New Vegas. Everybody said it's their favorite one. So I need to play New Vegas.
I'm still kind of unclear on how this isn't an official game then.
I think that's a good question. I think it's not one of the, because it's not made by the main studio. It's made by a different studio.
And they just can do that?
It's not that they can do that. It's they were probably they were hired out to do that. Bethesda, because Bethesda owned the rights, so they contract Obsidian to develop a follow-up, which I kind of wish they'd have done more, because again, this one's widely regarded as the best Fallout game. And two, I think, so this came out in 2010, Fallout 4 came out in 2015. That's a 5-year difference. And we haven't had another Fallout game since 2015. So I kind of wish they'd, like, you know, maybe get other studios to make new games, because we've had to wait over 10 years for a Fallout game.
And this is the one and only that Bethesda did, was 4.
I mean, Bethesda did, but Bethesda did 3 and 4.
Who did Vegas?
Who did Vegas was Obsidian.
Obsidian. This is the one and only one that Obsidian has done.
This is the only one Obsidian has done. They went on to do a game series called Outer Worlds, which is good. The first Outer Worlds is good, and that's getting a sequel, I think, this year, maybe next year.
Wow. Okay. No. I can't believe you didn't play the best Fallout.
I know. I bungled it.
I love Vegas. What happens in Fallout New Vegas stays in Fallout New Vegas.
Clearly, that's why I had to go find it. Find it. And yeah, I am too. It just didn't have a number after the name. So I'm like, whatever. And I think at the time when it launched, it had some bugs that people were like, I don't know. So like in hindsight, people regard it as their favorite. But at the time when it first released, It wasn't as well received. Is my headcanon what I'm choosing to say? Yeah. So anyway, but again, I chased down a copy. It should be getting here soon, and I'll play it and I'll report back. So this takes place in the remains of Las Vegas, of course called New Vegas, and this deals heavily with the New California Republic, which is obviously important, really important in the show. The fall of the New Republic, the New California Republic. So the Shady Sands is mentioned in New Vegas. And you may know New Vegas takes place in 2281. However, we learn in the show, it is implied in the show that Shady Sands was nuked in 2277. This is in it's episode 6. Yeah. Small spoilers for the show. Ella Purnell's Lucy goes into another vault. And a lot of the people that live in that vault are remnants from Shady Sands, and they have a history of Shady Sands on a chalkboard. And you see, if you're watching the video, we got the fall of Shady Sands, 2277, with an arrow pointed to a nuclear bomb. And so fans of New Vegas are like, wait, how can Shady Sands exist in New Vegas at 2281 if it got nuked in 2277? Does that mean the events of New Vegas are not canon? So, Howard, the head of Bethesda, explains the timeline like this. He's like, we're careful about the timeline. This is him talking about the show. We're careful about the timeline. There might be a little bit of confusion in some places, but everything that happened in the previous games, including New Vegas, happened. We're very careful about that. All I can say is that we're threading it tighter here, but the bombs fall just after the events of New Vegas. So there's a couple ways to interpret that. One is the fall of New Vegas is maybe like the fall of Rome. It didn't happen in a day. And so maybe it started in 2277, and then that final death note, which is the nuke that gets dropped on Shady Sands, happened post-2281. I will say, in preparing for this episode, I had to double check because I noticed Fallout 3 takes place in 2277. So it wouldn't surprise me if maybe they mixed up their dates when they made the show. Maybe they mixed up their dates. They're like, yeah, 2277. Yeah, the nuke can drop after that. And then it wasn't after the show came out. They're like, oh, fuck, we mixed up Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. Oh, shit. But I'll also say this. They live in a post-apocalyptic world. I would imagine it's hard to keep your dates straight. I think there's a little bit of flexibility here. What do you think, Roxy?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, like you said, the show could have gotten it wrong, which really doesn't matter that much. They're saying it's all canon, so it's all canon.
Yeah.
Number two, the dwellers could have gotten it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like they marked down 77 because yeah. That was when the start is. But also, like, they're not full. You know, it's not like they're all sitting around and learning about this in school, and it's like, you know, dates that you memorize. Mm-hmm. Like all the time, you know, if I asked you 10 questions about American history right now and for the dates, you might be like, like this rained? I don't know. Yeah. So it doesn't bother me that much. What I will say is when I was watching this episode, I did take note of this because they really stay on the chalkboard for a while.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder what exactly I'm supposed to be taking from this. Like, Ella Purnell is looking at this, and she's like, sorry, what's her character name?
Lucy.
Lucy, jeez. Yeah. She is, like, clearly taken aback by this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I just can tell this is some video game reference, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what.
I love the idea. I love the idea that maybe we assume this chalkboard's like the canon, but I love the idea that the teacher invited a student up and he filled in the date and the teacher's like, well, that's wrong, but we'll fix it later. We'll fix it later.
Well, like also, one of the things that's notable about this is how pretty the handwriting and the drawing mm-hmm. is. Like this person. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even like kind of what you were saying before about Fallout 76, which I thought was interesting because you had told me that the first Fallout takes place in 77, but 76 isn't a reference to the year before. 76 is a bunker number.
Yes.
So that's kind of interesting too. Like we could be assuming here that 77, that this was a year, but really that could be a reference to something else. The amount of people that died on the spot or whatever it is. Like,
oh yeah.
We don't know that number is indicating a year even.
I also, it's worth noting again, going back to they live in the apocalypse, like how do they keep track of dates in this world?
Right. Totally. Like I was thinking about that too. You know, I'm sure somebody's could be off by a few days. You could be off by a couple of years. And I really like what you said about the fall of Rome for sure. You know, like when we discuss anything from wars to like the Cold War was 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, it was a long time.
Yeah. It was a long time. And I do think there's some flexibility in the last episode where we get a little bit of the timeline. You do sense that there was tensions going on a long time. The point is, like you said, I think you said it pretty well. They say it's canon, so it's canon. Like if a date's wrong. And again, we live in post, what was it? Spider-Man Homecoming, where 8 years later, it's like, well, that's not right. That's the incorrect.
Those kind of things really don't bother me. Like even continuity things, like you left the Starbucks cup on the Game of Thrones set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We are playing pretend here.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's doing their best. Like yeah. I am glad that they came out and said, no, that all still counts. Because yeah. Okay, if you tell me it counts, then it counts.
Well, and they also have we also know that it's, I think people were partially concerned, one, because New Vegas is so popular, and because it wasn't developed by Bethesda, you know, maybe Bethesda doesn't like it as much or whatever, but The last, again, slight spoilers for the show. The last shot of the show is of New Vegas. That's where we'll get into it. There's, you know, there's a character approaching a city. That city is New Vegas.
How did you know that?
The internet told me, Roxy. The internet said.
This moment, I didn't know what that was.
Again, I haven't played New Vegas, so I wasn't immediately like, ah. I will tell you, there is in that shot, you see a little monster head like on a pyre when he's walking in, like there's a sign with a monster head. I did recognize the monster head.
I saw that shot. I just thought, again, this is something that video game people know. All I know is it's a different place.
Yeah, we're going someplace
totally
different.
Totally fine. Like, that's all I needed to know as a TV watcher.
I will say, and I think you can appreciate this even as not a game player, that shot of the sun rising with him in the armor walking, I'm like, ooh, that's good stuff. Ooh, that's good stuff.
A lot of shots in this. I mean, I don't actually know who their DP is, but I thought that this was so unbelievably shot, the entire series.
Yeah.
So good.
It's good. Spoilers for our thoughts on the show. It good. There's a scene, the ghoul goes to interrogate a father and son who are like sifting the sands for metal, and they're wearing like long coats and like armor, like gas masks. Mm-hmm. That's the iconic, that's like the box art armor. This is the new California Republic soldier uniform, which is from Fallout New Vegas. So clearly, I think that's one of the cool things about the show is there's references and appreciation for literally every component of the franchise, from one to New Vegas to four. You know, it really is a love letter to the games, and the fact that it is accessible to people who have not played the games while still feeling like somebody who has played a few of them, that's great. Like that juggling act, I just was really impressed by.
Referring to Walton Goggins as the ghoul.
Yeah.
In the video games, are they referencing the ghoul? Because in the show, we hear like he's the oldest of all the ghoul, 200 years or whatever. Yeah. He's made the longest. Do they reference that character in the video games?
Not that I'm aware of.
But they have ghouls.
Yes. In the video games. So just like in that episode where she releases all the other ghouls from like their coolers or whatever. You run into those guys, those types of zombie ghoul. They're zombies. They're basically zombies. Also, oh my God, sorry, we're jumping ahead, but we are introduced to, there's a character that becomes a ghoul in the show that is a human and then at some point becomes a ghoul. That character was so fucking funny to me, and I'm glad he's still running around somewhere.
And I loved his arc, honestly. I loved his arc.
Oh my God, it was good. I liked, yeah.
I thought that actor did an excellent job too.
He was great. It was great. It was good. So now we get to Fallout 4 in the timeline, which takes place in 2287. This, once again, was developed and published by Bethesda and was released in 2015. That's right, gang. It's almost been 10 years since we got a Fallout game. This one, you follow a survivor from Vault 111, and it's set in the Commonwealth, which is pre-war New England, so mostly like Boston and surrounding areas. And this game includes new factions. So the Brotherhood of Steel is in pretty much every game. This one also includes the Minutemen and the Institute, which when I was doing this, I realized I confused the Institute for the Enclave. They are two different organizations. I thought the Enclave was in 4-2. Nope, it's the Institute. And
the Institute and the Minutemen are never referenced in the TV show.
No, we've not gotten them yet. And that's something I actually think the show does really well in what it chooses to focus on. I think it'd be very easy to fall in the trap to try and do everything, especially when it comes to like monsters, like villains, and they are very selective in what they show, which I think, as a, you know, from a production budget perspective, I think is super smart. So one of the main enemies you'll run into in the game is something called a super mutant, which is like a green ogre Hulk looking dude. And the only reference you get to that is when Michael Emerson is at the Enclave. You'll see a person with a gurney and a giant like green arm flops out from the gurney. That's the only reference we get to super mutants. And I could see if fans would be like, oh, why not super mutants? And it's like, no, save that money. We don't need it. You guys did great. I think the only monsters we really get, we get ghouls. We get gulpers, which is the big fish thing with the thingies in its mouth, which was a nightmare. And we get the Yaogwai, which is the bear, and rad roaches. You got to do rad roaches, the giant cockroaches. You got to do those. That's basically it. There's a bunch of other enemies like Deathclaws. That's the head we see in the last episode, the big monster head. That's a Deathclaw. They don't do any of that shit. And I think it's smart. Save your money, man.
I know we're going to get there, but just so that I can contextualize this now.
Yes.
So you said that the Fallout 4 is 2287.
Yes.
And what year is the show?
I gotcha. It's 2296. So that is 9 years after Fallout 4. And it's 135 years after the first game setting. And that's 219 years after the Great War.
So it is the furthest point on the timeline?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that gets us to the show that came out this year. It's the furthest in the timeline, and it is the latest installment of this franchise in a future post-apocalyptic Los Angeles brought about by nuclear decimation. Citizens must live in underground bunkers to protect themselves from radiation, mutants, and bandits. So we've been building up to this. Roxy, what were your thoughts on the new show?
I think that this show is excellent. Yeah. I have a lot of questions. I have comments. I have concerns. But in general, I thought that it was really, truly excellent. To me, it's a very clear 1-2 of the year so far.
Yeah.
Shogun, for me, has that number one spot. I don't know that it's going anywhere, especially,
agreed,
and we'll talk about this and what we're into, DJ, but after this week's episode, I mean, that show is just, it's everything. And the number two show of the year right now for me is Fallout.
Totally.
I have currently watched 42 shows this year. I think I've said this on the show before that my goal is 120 shows this year. So I'm doing 10 a month, and this is one of them. But of the 42 shows, this is the number two show. And I've seen some really good stuff this year.
Yeah,
I think that it is super solid. I love that fans of the game and non-fans of the game are enjoying this equally. I think they picked really stellar actors. I love the world that we've created. It really doesn't have a weak area in terms of, like, when it comes to how it looks, how it sounds, the hair and makeup. There's just no area that I'm like, it's severely lacking here, you know? Mm-hmm. It just, everything is at least at really solid. And then there's so many things about it that bring it from solid to great, including our characters that apparently they've created for this show, who I'm so invested in. As a lover of love, shipper of ships, I've got a lot going on there. Mm-hmm. As an apocalypse girly queen, I've got a lot going on there. I also think that I live for gray characters like you do too, DJ.
Yeah.
And it has been very interesting, even with a character like the ghoul, mm-hmm, to be like, to see where he was and where he is, and then in your mind try to fill in the blanks, like, what happened here? Or to feel so strongly about characters like Ella Purnell's father or parents, and then to have things, no spoilers yet, but like completely just rock your world. The bait and switch of this show is so great.
Yeah.
And I'm just really into it.
I agree with you. I agree with you completely. Especially even Shogun is the best show I've watched this year. And even though Fallout, I think, is easily the number two, there's still a pretty significant... That's how good Shogun is. It's still like... Fallout's not even touching it, really. Maybe if we get a Severance this year, that might be the only contender for Shogun.
Severance season two or Silo season two, they might shake some things up for me, but I don't know that we're getting that, DJ.
I agree. But yeah, I and like you, it's so cool to hear, because obviously there's a lot for me here as a fan of the games. But again, in some ways, when the show was coming out, I thought like, well, in some ways this is easier than Last of Us because you don't need to tell one specific story. But in other ways, it's almost harder because the tone of Fallout is so specific, and to not fall in the trap of being slavish to the games, like making it so somebody that likes the games and that it's even set in the world, you're like, oh, this feels right, but still having it be accessible enough that somebody like you, that it doesn't know first thing about the games, understands what's going on, understands the basics of the world, like cares about all that stuff. And I think you're right. I think the show's smart in the way that it does that is by having compelling leads. And all of our three main leads, Lucy, Maximus, and the Ghoul, are great. I will say, and I love them all, I will say the one that interests me most is Maximus, because Lucy is a fantastic, you know, good-hearted, good-souled person that's thrown into a tough situation and might have to learn how to be a little bit harder to survive this world. The ghoul is the opposite. Grizzled, been around too long, seen too many bad things, and might need to learn to soften up a little bit. Maximus is interesting because, and we don't get this a lot, where it's somebody that clearly has aspirations of being a heroic person, but at his core is kind of selfish and kind of a loser. And like having that, I just find that really compelling. And seeing that character struggle with trying to figure out what the right thing to do is. I found all three of them are great, but I found Maximus' story really interesting.
I completely agree with you on that. Can I get into a little bit of spoilers?
Let's go into spoilers, because the whole first season's dropped. Roxanne, I've watched all of it. If you haven't watched the show, I highly recommend you check it out, but we're going to get into spoilers.
So one of my favorite moments of the entire show is when he finally does reveal to her that he is not a knight, mm-hmm. and he's saying that he's not a good person. And she's like, I just threw acid on some, like, you know, and that was kind of a reality check for me, because in my head, ranking the three main characters, I was like, okay, Lucy is the good guy.
Yeah.
And then Maximus is ambiguous. And then the ghoul's bad.
Yeah.
And then I kind of checked myself when she said that, because I was like, why do I believe that Lucy is better than Maximus?
Yeah.
Like, because she's more privileged, because she grew up with a silver spoon. She, in this world, she is doing as bad as he is.
Yeah.
She is hurting as many people as he is once she got here.
Yeah.
Not on purpose. And like, her heart might be a little more pure at this point, but I thought that was a really cool moment to kind of check us when you think she's going to like blow up at him and, you know, say like, how dare you have lied to me? And she's the same as him in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really, really well done scene. I also think that the actor who plays Maximus is very intriguing, because he is a little more stoic in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we kind of see him inside of his suit, yeah. we see his facial expressions actually show, which is cool. He's a perfect, perfect fit to play Cyborg. Just my thoughts on what,
yeah.
like, I understand that wouldn't be that different of a character for him. But like the second I saw him, I was like, oh my God, if Justice League is doing Cyborg again, then for sure that's who their first call should be.
It's hard for us for what we do. Like, it's the same thing when I was watching Monkey Man. I'm like, Dev Patel would be a good Batman. It's, you know.
I know.
It's
I
hard
know.
To not do that with what we do.
I see metal suit. Mm-hmm. I see like an incredibly buff dude who would be like just fucking awesome for it, you know, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, and it's easy to perceive like Lucy as kind of the naive one, but then you have the conversation they have. I think episode 6 is my favorite episode. That's where they're in Vault 4. Because then they have a conversation about sex and you realize how little Maximus, because he basically grew up with religious zealots. Like, he clearly doesn't understand how basic anatomy works. And so you're like, oh, but then, no, it's in episode 3, I think, is where they're having to cross the bridge. And he's ready to go. Like, he's, you know, the people are bringing different things to the table. And I, of course, love the ghoul because I love Walton Goggins. And I like what we do there, because he's also our window into the past. I do have some questions there that I think we'll have to approach in later seasons, because obviously there's that fantastic opening sequence where he's running from the nukes with his daughter. But what we learn in the final episode, it's like, what wasn't the implication is spoilers. The implication is mom was in on it. So how did one, why was daughter with dad? And also, how did we not know? How was daughter, if let's say dad and mom are estranged, how was daughter in a position to be around where the nukes dropped? Which some people, like I said, there's been speculation for a long time about who dropped the bombs. And some people aren't happy that it's the reveal that it was Vault-Tec. I actually don't know that it was Vault-Tec. We see that in that big meeting. They're like, we should do it ourselves. But it could
Why
be...
Why aren't they happy with that?
I think because I do think it is... I don't know that the logic
obvious choice.
No, not necessarily that, because I think like the original creator at Interplay intended it to be China Drops at first. And so I guess everybody had their theories. I don't know that I think the logic entirely tracks. It makes sense that they would want the threat of nuclear warfare to loom the whole time so they can sell these vaults, but to actually trigger it, I think they do enough that obviously, again, we're full spoilers now, everybody, that all these wealthy business people are still going to be around. It's not like they're doing this to the benefit of somebody in the future. They're still going to be around because they're cryogenically frozen. So that tracks a little bit. But I just think, I still think there's room that, yeah, she floated the idea that we should be the one that drops the nukes. It could still be revealed in season two that somebody else did. That they were going to, but things didn't go as planned, which is why their daughter is out and about when the nukes drop. Because otherwise, I think mom would make a call and be like, hey, you, by the way, you need to be in a vault right now.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you completely on that. I had a couple of things like that. Less like that, more just I'm curious what's going on here.
Yeah.
Like when the mom is referencing she really wants to be in one of the good vaults.
Mm-hmm.
And I, at this point, as a viewer who's only seen the show, I have no idea how many vaults there are.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what the variety of vaults are.
So in the games, that's something I liked. You, when we talked about it last week, because we talked about off air a little bit, you were like, oh, I'm really interested in what they're doing with Vault 33. And I was like, yes. Oh, it's crazy that we spent, because in the games, you leave the vault and rarely come back. But what they did there is in the games, you almost always run into other vaults, and it's almost always some sort of bullshit experiment that's gone wrong and that you have to like deal with whatever. And so that eventually that story, Lucy kind of deals with in 4, but it's mostly her brother and cousin goofing around in 32 and 33. So that, so when she's, when the ghouls, Cooper is the character, Walton Goggins' character, Cooper, when his wife's talking about the good vaults, one presumes she means the one where we're cryogenically frozen and safe and not one of the ones where one of these businesses is like goofing with your genetics.
Okay, because that was my question about this. So the where they were frozen, what is that, Vault 34?
31.
31.
Yeah.
Okay. So in 31, when we got in there and it's that little robot dude.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, how many of the vaults are this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, or is this the only vault that's this? Where there's two vaults, one's the vault and one is the like ancillary vault.
Yeah.
It's a different number.
Yeah.
Or is this the only one like that? And that's not a bad thing that I'm curious about this world. It's just, I don't know absolutely anything about the vaults except for the one that they're from. And then the one that we end up in 6.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And was just really curious about that, kind of just like what is going on there, which made me curious about the dad in general, like now switching over, not talking about Walton Goggins' wife, talking about
Kyle
Lucy's
McLaughlin.
Dad.
Yeah.
Right. Just like what was his end goal? Because we do start with him being like, hopefully your children's generation, speaking to Lucy and the new guy she was supposed to marry, which unbelievable way that they shot that too with them first sleeping together. I thought that was great. Great. I just thought it was shot very well.
Yeah, interesting
to jump in. So, but he's like, you know, hopefully your guys' children's can be above and they're going to be the ones who aren't vault dwellers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so was that a lie or what is the actual goal here? You know,
that's a good point. And I do think, because I don't know that I have an answer for that. Like I can make guesses, but I think some of that, we don't know. So the quote unquote main antagonist of the season is Lee Moldaver, who kidnaps the dad. And we find out one,
so
not
good too, by the way, another, an amazing, amazing performer where it's like,
they got some amazing, because it's like, Sarita Chowdhury plays Lee Moldaver and she's been a bunch of shit and she's always great. They pulled an amazing cast for this, but you find out one, that she's not as villainous as she first appeared. And two, that she was around pre-apocalypse, but we never find out. One presumes she wasn't in one of the vaults. She doesn't seem to be Team Vault. But we don't get an answer to that. And so I think some of that stuff is intentionally ambiguous, which, by the way, I believe as of this recording, it's been confirmed that they're getting a season two, which of course they are. Everybody's talking about this show. So I'm assuming that might be something. I don't think we've gotten... I still think there's some more stuff in the past we need to uncover from where we left Cooper, where he finds out that his wife's kind of in on it, to that first moment where the bombs drop. I think we need to find out, how did Lee survive the apocalypse? What happens to Coop and his wife? Because I got the I was under the presumption in the first scene in the first episode that either they're on the outs, maybe something happened to her, that they're not together anymore. I think there's still some stuff to uncover there.
Definitely, which is cool that there's so many areas that I think are worth looking into. Just other random thoughts I have about. Yeah. I think why I think Ella Purnell did such a great job is, you know, when you picture yourself, I'm an actress. And so I'm thinking about like how you would do what she's doing. The first time I hear her, and I'm assuming that this is just because of the year, and maybe this does come from the video games or not, but the first time we hear her say okie dokie, mm-hmm. I was like, the way she made that sound natural must have been the hardest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the entire series, as she said okie dokie, and I'm just like, what? Like, how is she doing this? Yeah. How is she making it believable? Or when she's like, oh, do you want to have sex now?
Mm-hmm.
Just such an interesting, because she's like kind of Pleasantville.
Yeah.
But she's the sexually liberated Pleasantville girl.
Mm-hmm.
Because sex means something different to her because of the way that she came up.
Yeah.
And then the stuff with the cousin sex, I was like, oh my God, stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, considering the context, that makes sense, but I really wish you would stop talking about it.
yeah, totally. I just thought she did such a great job with that, such a difficult role to play, underratedly difficult.
Yeah, because it'd be easy, I think, to write as well, because it would be easy to make that character not as compelling as it is. Like, somebody that is, and I think... I really like the empathy of the show. Like you mentioned, and I stopped watching Walking Dead around season two. But that is part of
it. That is anti-committal. Okay.
That is part of a generation of shows where it's always like the characters always have to make the hard, gritty. Like I was a little worried in, I think it's in episode two or three where we go back to the vault and her brother's like, I think we should kill the prisoners. And I'm like, don't do this. Don't be this show. And it's not like it's surprising considering it's a post-apocalyptic or whatever. It's a surprisingly nuanced with, like, we talked a little bit about Thaddeus, who was Maximus's bully that ends up becoming a squire. And he has that moment where he talks about, like, yeah, we picked on Maximus a bunch, and I was picked on first, and I'm bummed that he never got the opportunity to pick on somebody else. And it's like, oh, this is a person. I don't agree with his decisions, but he's a human being just like anybody else.
I thought that was a brilliant thing, too. And he's like, I wish that he got to live long enough to pick on the next person.
Yeah.
Like you only know what you know.
Yeah.
And you can't do better until you know better. And he was at first you think like just a prick, and then you're like, oh, and then like Maximus becomes the asshole, mm-hmm. like tattooing it, you know, and all the things, and not telling him, being the liar. I'm curious to see him at the beginning of his school journey.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I've never seen that.
Yeah.
So I was so upset with the show for a second when I didn't know what was going on when the thing went through him.
Yeah.
And I thought the show was just doing like, oh, well, if it hit at a certain angle, somebody could totally be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, fuck you guys. Come on.
Yeah.
And then when I realized, I was like, oh, snap. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I'm glad he's sticking around. It'll be interesting to see. Because another thing the show does well is bouncing different characters. Like, everybody's going on a journey with everybody else at a certain point. So it's like, at some point, Thaddeus is going to hook up with Walton Goggins. And he's going to get some ghoul advice. And I'm excited for that. Because I was surprised to learn that Thaddeus is super fucking funny. And I want more of him. I want more of him on the show.
Is your impression that these are our characters and this is our show? Or is your impression that this show is going to do what the games have done?
No, I think these are our characters, especially with the way we end this season. But maybe that's also me saying, like, I love these characters so much. Don't stick with them. I want to see how Lucy grow. I want to see Lucy hanging out with the ghoul more. Like, what's that? Because these are our most polar opposite moral code characters. What's that like? What's their little journey like?
I want to know about the brother more.
The brother's great. The
brother's journey. Yeah, because...
When we leave him, it's like, ooh.
Yes. Yeah. And when she leaves the vault and she's like, don't try to come with me. And he says, like, I'm not brave enough to do that.
Yeah.
But then we see him when he leaves the vault. And it's like, he's having quite a journey himself.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that journey?
Yeah. Good, good show. We got a few questions from the Discord. You can be part of our Discord over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Jake Hefner asks, do you think Amazon dropping all the episodes at once hurt the long-term conversation about Fallout compared to if it was done as a weekly release?
I think that the biggest mistake the show made was dropping it all at once.
Yeah.
I think it's a big bummer because even as we were, so I watched it all within 2 days, I think.
Yeah.
And even as we're talking about it now, I'm like, and you were like in episode 6, and I was like, I don't know which one was episode 6. Yeah. You know, I watched this as a, how many episodes was it? 8?
8, yeah.
So I watched it as an 8-hour movie pretty much.
Yeah.
And I think that's massively going to hurt the show in the same way that it hurts Stranger Things for me when people are like this episode. And I'm like, I watched that so long ago, even as we were preparing for this conversation, I was like, I don't even know if I remember half the things that happened because I've now watched 10 other shows since this.
Yeah.
And this show is excellent and it didn't need to be a binge model because there was so much going on in every episode and cliffhangers and things to leave you coming back for more. I genuinely think that these types of shows should release 3 episodes at once or 2 episodes and then weekly.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why Amazon would have done it this way. It doesn't make sense to me. And I think it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Same with, obviously I feel it more with this show, but same with Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And especially with what we do, I would have loved to cover this weekly.
Like Shogun.
I would have loved to cover weekly. And I think for me, I don't know if this is the goal, but for me, the binge model where you release all the episodes at once feels like a step towards making our entertainment even more disposable.
Yes.
And I think it's especially egregious when, like you mentioned, Stranger Things. How it was like, what, 2 years ago since season 4?
I don't even know.
And it's going to be another year before 5. So it's like, okay, so every episode was released in a week.
Didn't we have 5 and it's another year before 6 or we're at 4? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I don't watch Stranger Things, so I don't. You'd have to tell me. I thought we just did 4.
We had a part A and B, so I get confused with some stuff. I don't know.
But it's like, okay, so you released, that's a good point. So you released all the episodes in 2 batches and then it's like a 2 to 3 year wait between seasons. Like, how do you expect your audience to like, stay engaged the same way? Like, remember in the Arrow Flash days, we're getting 22 episodes a year, once a week, basically. Then a few months off, then we're back into it, man. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's really, really tough. Like, it, you know, I try to think as a business person as well when they make decisions like this, because I'm like, okay, as a consumer, this clearly isn't the best way to watch.
Yeah.
Is this somehow making them more money? And I have to imagine no.
Yeah, especially with when you look at Netflix, where it's like we need a new thing every week, and so but instead of a new episode, it's an entire series, and it's like that. How I get that right now of the apps, you have more money than God, but like that doesn't make any sense to me.
I know.
Another question from Clementine: why do you think video game shows are working so much better than video game movies? Is it just down to length, or do you think there's an entirely different philosophy the show adaptors have discovered that movie adaptors haven't cracked yet? So Roxy, as a gaming expert, why do you think, and I do think Clementine's right, by the way, that at least as far as reception, Last of Us, Fallout, even Halo are being better received than most video game movies. Why do you think that is?
Well, while we joke about me being a video game expert, I am a TV expert.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do understand the medium of television very well. And of course, I understand why television would be a better medium for video games. It's not just about length as much as it's about your ability to spend time with more characters, world building.
Yeah.
And these popular video games that have an entire world when you have created so much in this world, and then you go and you say, now make that world 2 hours. I think that they try to show the whole world in 2 hours,
yeah,
as opposed to trying to show 2 hours worth of the world.
Yeah.
And because, and I do think that there is a merit to video game movies doing well in the future if they can kind of get that down. Mm-hmm. Listen, the goal of the movie is not to show the entire game.
Yeah.
It's to show 2 hours worth of an interesting story that could take place in that game.
Yeah.
But we don't do things like that. As an entertainment industry, we're trying to show the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I think because of that, that's why if we're trying to show the whole thing or more of the thing, that is why not only is it work better in TV format, but like see something like The Walking Dead, it took 14 seasons. You know, it's not just even one season. And some might say that went on too long. Yes. But I don't think anybody thought that until season 5, 7, you know, like, so, I do think that it works better like that. The one thing I do question all the time, though, is why have we been able to nail books as movies?
Yeah.
Video games. Why? Like, oftentimes there is a 600-page book.
Yeah.
And we put that 600-page book into an hour and 45-minute, two-hour movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of the book readers will be like the movie a lot. And they'll be like, yeah, they didn't explore this area, or this area. They just kept it tight.
Yeah.
Why can we do that with books and not video games?
That's a good question. Maybe because as a culture, we've had more time with books and we have more history with book adaptations. We've basically been adapting books since we've been making movies. And video games are a newer medium. And so I think we're getting better. I think everything Roxy said is 100% true. I totally agree with it. I also think there might be an element where one of the reasons we're doing better now is that we're having people that are more familiar with the games and have a better idea on how to adapt them, as opposed to somebody. Same reason comic book movies are better. People know the medium more, as opposed to when we were first doing it, where it's like, I guess people are really into this stupid game. Go make a movie. I've never played it. Do it. All right. I guess this bullshit. So I think that's part of it as well. But no, I think that's an incredibly good point. And I just, as a fan of these games, I'm glad we're doing well. Clementine also pointed out, and I don't have time to go into it, but how shows like Castlevania, Arcane, Cyberpunk, Edgerunners, and Last of Us all approach their game adaptations differently, but all succeeded. So there's not like a one-to-one formula. And I do think that's interesting. And if we had more time, I'd want to go into it. But to wrap us up, Leonard Kim asked, I haven't played the games, and maybe I missed something in the show. Is the Brotherhood just a bunch of survivors of the Wasteland coming together, or a bunch of ex-Vaulters? I got confused on how they came to be. They're ex-survivors. So there's people that survived in the vaults, and then there's people that lived on the surface that survived. That's the Brotherhood of Steel, by and large.
Like in the way that they found Max, they found everybody, kind
yes.
of, it seems
yeah.
like to me.
Yeah. And then Mike Joyce asked, would you want to see more sci-fi stuff like Super Mutants and Synths in season 2? Yes, Mike, yes. But I will say again, as Roxy said, this idea of like, you know, picking and choosing what you show within your limits, it felt like this show had a really tight understanding of this is our budget. So that means no super mutants. That means no death claws. If we're going to do it, we need to, the stuff we're going to do needs to be stuff that we can do well. And so if all we can do well is a gulper and a yagwai, that's all we're doing. And I'm like, yeah, 100%. That's the way you should do it. I don't want to see a shitty super mutant. If either do it or don't do it. And they decided don't do it. And I think that was the right call. So if in season 2, they get more money and we can see some super mutants, down for it. If not, I don't care. I like what the show's doing.
I'm with you. I think that we've seen this on especially superhero shows, like, you know, that are like, but Grodd.
Yeah.
It's like, but you can't afford Grodd.
Mm-hmm.
So don't do Grodd.
Yeah.
Bad Grodd, way worse than no Grodd.
Yeah. So, Roxy, let's wrap this up. Where can the kids find what you're working on?
You guys can find me everywhere at Roxy Stryer. Let me know if you guys have suggestions for where I can write all the TV shows that I am watching. Like a Letterboxd, but for TV shows, because it doesn't work as well on Letterboxd.
It doesn't. Way. I heard that they were going to incorporate more TV shows onto Letterboxd, but I haven't seen that happen yet. So I don't know what the status is.
The shows I'd be watching are so weird and they are not there. And I'm like, But you guys, everybody keeps asking me, update your list. And I'm like, it's just on a notepad on my phone.
Maybe you could do like on something on Patreon, like just to have a post that you keep posting. Yeah, let Roxy know. I think that's a great idea. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash. You can find the show everywhere that matters at Only Stupid Answers, but on Twitter / X.
Think of the balance from stupid.
And we'll see you all next time.